CliffCentral.com.
It's Jub Jub. Good time of your life. He's much happier now out of prison than he was in prison.
That's fair enough, right? You could say that.
All right. We're talking to a man who knows all about digital influence and digital transformation. What it means, how to do it, its challenges, how businesses around the world are succeeding with it. And he's even got a show here on cliffcentral.com, and we haven't properly got to meet him on this show, so I thought we'd get him in. Ryan Hogarth is a speaker, writer, researcher on digital transformation. He has an ongoing fascination with tracking the changing behavior of people in terms of their job as customers, their role as customers, workforces, businesses, through the increasing influence of the digital environment, from rural villages to high corporates. Everything is changing.
Yes.
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 How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm very well, Gareth. How are you doing?
I asked you now how your weekend was, and you went, you took a little while, you thought about it.
Well, when we ask people how they are.
You forget you had a weekend?
No. I didn't want to just say, oh, it was good. I wanted to give it some actual thought and give a real answer.
And then your answer was, like every other weekend.
Yeah, it was kind of, I didn't do anything drastically unusual.
All right.
I did not know. There's a lot of things about you that I didn't know that I discovered in doing a little research about you before the show this morning.
Yes.
Well, you're a very interesting man. Okay. I mean, we start with the obvious stuff and we'll get into the crazy and wacky stuff a little bit later on. But the funny thing is, I was at I told you I went to my first ever gay wedding, Mubs, in December.
No, remember? I don't remember this.
I told you, Ben.
Yes, maybe my buddy was. And then your dad said something afterwards, which your sister got upset about.
Yeah. So I went to my first ever gay wedding that I'd been present at, and Ryan was the marriage officer. I didn't know you were a marriage officer.
Yeah, it's kind of one of
you
that.
You can perform marriages?
Yes. And actually, I've been doing it for a long time, so it's this kind of weird other side of my life, which I enjoy a lot. I mean, it's an awesome thing to be able to do. And many years ago, it was sort of a moonlight. It was a way to make money on the weekends because I wasn't making any money during the week.
You're good at it, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So when you ask, I guess the real answer to the question is, how was your weekend? Yesterday was very quiet. Saturday was a wedding.
Oh, so you performed the wedding.
Yes.
How many weddings do you think you've done?
I can tell you exactly how many I've done. It's 1,264. But that's in like 16 years, 17 years.
Do you know how many of those marriages are still together?
That's the one thing I have made no effort to keep track of.
It must be kind of a cool thing to be there on, because for these people who get married, wherever they are, whatever the marriage, for them it's the most important day of their lives in some ways. It's right up there. It's with being born. It's with dying. It's a major, fork in the road. It's a major turning point. It's a major event in their lives. And you're there. You're the guy who's presiding.
It's a very happy time you're dealing with people at a very nice time in their lives.
Right.
They're happy and they're excited. So from that point of view, it's a great job. And you meet a wide variety of people, some very interesting people, some very dull people, but every one wedding to the next is very similar, but the people and their story make it unique and different.
But you must have seen one or two really bizarre weddings.
I get asked that question so often, and sadly not.
They're all standard.
Even people who are, I once married a couple of goths, and I thought that wedding was going to be like way out there. And they were way out, they had the long hair and the rings and the makeup. But when it came to the wedding, they were in a little chapel and he was dressed in a kilt and she was dressed in a red and black dress, which was as wild as it was for the most part. Then for the rest, it was really ordinary.
When you are a presiding officer, but you are non-denominational.
Yes, non-denominational, non-religious.
How does that work? I mean, how do you get that right? Because for some people, it isn't a marriage unless it's religious.
Well,
if you're a devout Hindu or a devout Catholic or a devout Muslim and it's non-religious, they don't believe that's even a marriage.
Well, then they don't come to me.
Okay.
You're
the go-to guy for non-religious.
Exactly. And more and more, traditionally you grow up in Rudaput, you go to the church on the corner, and when it's time to get married, that's the dude that's going to do it. But more and more people are out of that, if it's mixed faith, mixed race, mixed whatever. You know, there's more and more people are outside that traditional arrangement, and they don't want something religious, or they want something down the middle because it's a Jewish and a Catholic guy coming together.
Right.
So that's the role I fill, is when it's not religious, not
that's pretty cool. Church.
Yeah, it's great.
And obviously, you see a lot of just a lot of happy people. Like it's a big deal to them, and you know, the families are all involved.
It depends what number wedding it is. The first one's always big and huge. If it's second or third, it's normally like, you know, sure, we're just having a get together. Come round.
The fourth wedding, no one even notices.
Exactly.
Just quietly at the magistrate's office. No, it was cool to see you in action though, doing that, because I mean, what a job. Do you get paid?
Yes. No, listen, it was a moonlight back in the day. And then over the last 6 years, as I've been sort of building my business as a speaker, you know, that was something that was there that helped give me the room to build it.
Have you made enough money out of just doing weddings to like add an extra room on the house or?
Listen, it's not
lucrative.
It is lucrative. There are 900 weddings a week in Gauteng alone.
Sure,
so you know, it's still, despite what everything we hear about weddings, that it's still incredibly popular. People are still getting married 2, 3, or 4 times. So yeah, it's a good business.
And does your appearance with the beard and the silver hair, does that kind of add credibility to it as well?
I think so. I think the role it plays is I can fit. I sort of have this omnicultural thing, you know. Yeah. So
you look like a guru, swami, priest.
I know. If I'm marrying a Jewish couple, then I look like the rabbi. If they're Greek, I could be the Greek Orthodox dude. So yeah.
Oh man, that's exciting. What's the biggest age gap you've done in terms of a wedding between the husband and wife?
You know, I think it was like 2 years ago. I think the dude was like 65 and the girl was 29.
Yo.
So that was a little odd. The one that freaked me out, though.
Very rich.
No, Gareth, it was.
of course.
But the ones that I always is interesting for me is when it's an older woman and a younger guy, because that's so unusual, you know. And that was also, I think she was just about to turn 60 and he was like 32 or something.
Wow.
And you go,
wow.
That's. And she was well off.
Cougar.
Yeah, no,
proper. Explosive. All right, let's talk about some other stuff.
Okay.
First of all, you're a speaker, and when you go out and you talk about digital transformation. Mm. I mean, we're all involved in social media, so this is your business. Mm. How do you look at it in a way that we don't look at it?
Well, my interest was, well, I guess when I decided to become a speaker, I wasn't sure what I was going to speak about, but I sort of came into this industry knowing nobody and having no real background on from which to build it. And so social media was a great way to network. So that's 6 years ago. And it was a time when it was just becoming a thing for business. So that's what I landed up speaking about. And it was interesting to me that a guy like myself at the age of 38 at the time, could from almost nothing build a business, build a network because of the global nature of social media, and that led to my interest on how customers and employees were changing because of their use of technology and social media. And then now these days we talk about it as digital, where it's not just, it's all these things have come together, social media, technology, and business in most part are not keeping up with it. They're still trying to do things that they did before. So
let's hand out some awards. I mean, you're an expert in this field. Your show's called Digital Influence.
Yes.
What you talk about is largely in this realm. Mm. Which industries are still not on the money in terms of catching up with change, digital change, and which ones are not only on time but even ahead of the curve sometimes? Like if you break it down by sectors.
Wow, that's a fascinating question. I think the ones that are getting it right are the ones that were most disrupted in years past. So if
early
you look
on,
so if you look at entertainment, is and there's still a lot going on there, you know, with movies and music, and there was massive resistance, but it was the outsiders of, you know, iTunes and then later on Netflix and those sort of streaming services. So I think that industry, by and large, has kind of got it right there. You know, they've provided a service that people need, that they want. And then any industry that understands that the way we use technology today is personal. We're customizing it to ourselves. It's become incredibly personal. So all of those that kind of understand that and are working to customize what they do or give the ability to their customers to personalize the technology that they use. You know, the big one now is financial services, which is going through its disruption. And I think, you know, First National Bank got it right a few years ago, and they were named the most innovative bank in the world, but that was 3 years ago already, and perhaps they're not quite there anymore, and they're struggling.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people going, oh well, they've kind of slipped back.
Yes, well, that is the problem. It's all very, you know, you get out in front, everybody's going to catch up with you eventually. So,
right.
So it's an ongoing process.
What's the most interesting thing that you've witnessed in terms of digital transformation, digital influence in South Africa as opposed to anywhere else? Like, what are we especially interesting from the point of view of digital transformation about?
Well, I think the interesting thing about South Africa is we ride this, or we straddle this first world, third world thing, because in some respects, technologically, we're kind of way out there and we're doing really well, but then we have the issues of data, which I know, you know, you've been involved in, and how do we get data to everybody so that we can use it. But I think there's, if we look down in Cape Town, we have the Silicon Cape, where there's some incredible startups coming together and people sort of trying to emulate the Silicon Valley thing of investing in and building startups.
But the difference is that it's Cape Town, they only wake up at 10. They possibly compete.
Well, to be fair to them, they probably stay, you know, the sun goes down later in summer, so maybe they're putting in a bit of extra
fair
time.
Fair enough. So, do you think this is a good place to be in terms of where digital influence is going?
I think so. It is probably the, from a business perspective, the biggest thing going on right now is a preoccupation with how do we deal with this change that's coming from, you know, our industry. We've always done business in a certain way. How do we bring technology into that? How do we understand people in that? So it is a great place to be. It's going to be the thing that dominates for the next 3, 4, 5 years, that change. And there's going to be winners, there's going to be losers, but I reckon about 80% of business don't quite understand it, and they're still trying to restrict technology at work. These are the companies that still won't allow you to use Facebook in the office.
Crazy, right?
Or say, turn off your smartphone.
Didn't most of the, I mean, this is unbelievable to me. The ad agencies, what do you need? Most of the ad agencies banned social media at work in the beginning. They didn't understand. This is where you need to be. This is advertising.
Well, the evolution of it is interesting. And then those that said, okay, we're going to do social media, but only marketing's allowed access. Yeah. Everyone else can't touch it. And the problem is, you know, we tend to try and do
madness,
new things, or we do old things with new technology. Mm. And that's what we saw with social media. Okay, well, let's take all our shit brochures and crappy website and stuff it into Facebook and wonder why we can't build a following or no one's interested in us. And so it goes and it evolves. And I think most would agree now that, you know, social is not, it's not my business and social media. It's kind of, in many cases, integrated now, and that's the way of things. It integrates over time. Eventually, it just becomes the way we do things.
I mentioned earlier what an interesting guy you are, and you've got such an interesting life story, which we'll get into in a second or two. I think a lot of people feel that they want to take the world on in terms of social media with their opinions, with where they fit into things. But it can also be a really scary place, right? And there's a nasty side to being online.
Absolutely, without question.
And you deal with that in what you talk about a lot of the time.
You know, there's no – all the traditional filters are no longer there. It's very much – I mean, if you – decide to be online, or even if you don't, if you're a public figure or you're a big business, you're there, you're almost standing naked before the world.
Right.
And of course it can be nasty and it can be tense, but it is a fact of life. It is, you know, we can't use any of these things as a reason not to be involved and not to be thinking about it and strategizing around it. And
you can't really opt out.
No, there is that. This is part of human evolution. This is where we have come to, whether it's kind of like Trump in office. You know, you can be freaked out about it, you can be marching about it, but
it's true.
It's an is. And how do we deal with the world as it is rather than how we hope it is or hark back to the times when things were simple. You know, when all I needed to talk to my customers was a P.O. box, a phone, and a fax machine. You know, it was nice and easy back then.
I think a lot of companies would love to go back to that.
Mm. And because they were in control. They they had an idea and they could push it out onto their customers. The agenda is very much driven by customers today and what I want, what I need, and how quickly you can service me. And that's uncomfortable if you're traditionally used to, you know, so telling your customer, oh, well, I'm open from this time to that time, be there, and if you're late, well, too bad for you. Now, you know, that whole relationship is different.
I listened to one of your podcasts a while ago. You talked about emotional balance in digital influence. This was a while ago. I think it was, back in October.
Okay.
And you spoke to Steph Vermeulen.
Oh, yes.
About EQ.
Yes.
And feeling and being able to figure out emotionally where you sit in a world that is increasingly technological. Mm.
The mistake that is often made is, you know, we live in such a technological time. I mean, there is incredible things that are coming. You know, in the next few years, it's all going to be about artificial intelligence, and we can get into gene editing and 3D printing,
virtual reality,
and it's very easy to become a little obsessed about the technology and then forget that there's people involved. And the mistake with digital transformation is either one, we ignore it, and we've spoken a little bit about that. We're okay, well, don't use technology, or we become obsessed with it and we focus so much on technology and forget to bring people on board. So it is the point of digital transformation. It's a two-sided affair. It's people and technology. So as much as we want to use technology, the more technological we become, the more we're finding we have to understand and know people better, and their emotional response, and how we embrace it and use it and think about our customer and so on. So it is a two-sided affair.
So what's your story? Where are you from? Like, tell us about what your background is.
Sort of a vague question with a specific destination.
No, I do want to. Yeah, I've got a specific destination in mind, but I want to know, kind of, you know, I could simplify me, Ben Mabali, and say we're from here. This is what we've grown up like, and this is the sort of person we are. But it's always better to get that from someone themselves, because you've lived in your own body and you've lived your life. And
yes.
For me to try and summarize your life would be at most a tall ask.
Yeah, fair enough.
And at least very condescending. So you decide.
All right, fine. Well, I am 100% South African, born in Johannesburg. I grew up, and probably the unusual part of my upbringing was that I grew up a Scientologist. My parents met through Scientology, and so it was kind of.
Oh, you've gone straight to the destination.
Did I shoot too quickly?
I was so going to zero in on that. No, you brought it up. No, but you brought it up. Your parents met as Scientologists.
Yes.
And you were raised as a Scientologist.
Correct.
You're not a Scientologist anymore.
No, I'm not.
That doesn't happen easily.
You know, no, it doesn't. Well, it certainly doesn't happen simply. It's a complicated thing.
The Scientologists don't like apostates.
No. No, they're kind of okay if you go quietly, which as I was leaving, my mom asked me to do. She says, Ryan, why can't you just go quietly?
They're both still Scientologists,
yes, very much so,
your mom
yeah.
and dad?
Yeah, wow. Very, very involved. Okay. Yeah, I was kind of a rarity in that I was a third generation. My grandmother got involved in Rhodesia back in the day. And then she traveled down to Johannesburg to fight the battle and carry on the mission, and brought her two kids, my dad and his brother.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, my dad would meet my mom.
So in Scientology, is it like any other kind of society, any other religion where you go to church on a Sunday, and I'm saying Christian religions
here. Part of the allure of Scientology was that we were quote-unquote different.
Oh.
And one of the hard things to face when I was leaving was, well, essentially we're the same as everybody else. But part of the allure was, no, we're not like a regular church. It's not a Sunday thing. You know, you can...
It's special.
And it was... And we didn't... Scientology, we don't focus on a god.
Okay.
We focus on ourselves and our own enlightenment and spiritual advancement. So you're spending a lot of time in sort of counseling, being introspective in yourself and studying the works of Scientology to try and understand yourself better. So So it was that. So it was more of a full-time thing. You know, you could go to a Scientology organization any day of the week and study for a period of time or have the counseling. So it was
so
kind
you,
of
you could walk thing.
In theory, yes.
And you can sit down and you can start figuring out your place in the world.
Well, that's what you're supposed to be.
Okay,
doing.
Explain to me this thing around engrams.
Yes.
Engrams are bad psychological experiences.
Engrams are painful. Yeah. Okay. You know, you had a car accident, you're unconscious. Right. That's an engram.
But even things that you're not conscious of, things that might have happened years,
well, the idea
years
is that,
ago.
Yeah, so you have the car accident, you're in a coma for a week.
Yeah.
Everything that goes on during that time is recorded, and
sure.
So you don't have conscious recollection of it, but it can have an impact on you.
Of course.
It is all there and, you know, subconscious and okay. All. So the process of Scientology, or at least, you're trying to clear the negative effect of those sorts of things in your life.
And they do these what do they call them? With the testing and the where they measure it and they
yeah, well they've got
what
a
they called
what are you talking about the machine or the
yeah, yeah, the machine
the
and
e-meter.
The whole process.
The e-meter, yeah.
Okay, so how does that
so,
work?
It's auditing. So
auditing.
Yeah, so you're holding on to cans. It's a fairly simple meter and it kind of registers changes in, I guess, electrical charge. So if you remember something painful, it'll register on the meter. So it's supposed to be a guide for the Scientology counselor who takes you through the process. He goes, there's something there.
I'm not here to knock it and to poo-poo it, because one thing that really irritates me is when people who are Muslims, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Shintoists say, oh, that, you know, that's Scientology.
Those guys are crazy.
They believe in some serious bullshit. And you're like, well, how are you any better? You know, you also believe in some bullshit.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm very careful not to say, well, Scientology is properly whack. But it was invented by, it was conceived by, it was made up by, to be pejorative about
yes,
it.
Yes, fair enough.
Say, I'm admitting it's pejorative, but that's the way it is. It was written by a science fiction writer, L. Ron Hubbard, put together based on zero, well, like most good religions, based on zero evidence and completely made up on the spot, but full of really good tales.
You know, as a general thing,
I'm not trying to get you in trouble with
this. No, not at all. I'm quite happy to go either way with this. But I think the mistake that was made was, you know, let's be a religion.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things in the written works that kind of, they're not bad. They're sort of, you know, on your daily basis, like, oh, wow, you know, I can make a goal and make a plan around it. But as soon as you take anything and make it a religion, now it is sacred text. And that text may not be changed. It may not be viewed critically. And that was, to me, as I look back on my time with them, is where it started to go wrong, is that now we're a religion. And
okay, but the text itself, let's take what L. Ron Hubbard
wrote. Yeah.
This is where it gets a little bit weird.
Yes.
He writes these stories about how there's this planet, and there are these evil, wicked people on this planet, and there's a Lord Xenu.
Yes.
Right? How do they teach you this and complete the story for us? Because
I'm not even going to complete it.
There must be people who are fascinated by
it. But I'll tell you, in all the time I was there, and I was there, I grew up with it, and I worked there for 25 years. I was never exposed to that. That's,
you're kidding.
That's high level shit that you get to later.
You're
so
joking.
I never. The first time I heard about it was in a media interview, because I was the spokesperson for a while, and there are people raising the issue. Oh, what about the Xena stuff? And I'm going, oh, I don't even know what you're talking about. So that's like sort of high level that I never got to. Where
okay,
you
so what do they
that.
Teach at the lower
at
level?
At the lower level, it's all kind of easy stuff.
You're scum,
you know,
you low level.
No,
scum.
No. This is, you know, you are responsible for your own life, and you got to unburden yourself.
Not a bad philosophy.
No. There's great philosophy there, but the mistake is, let's call it a religion. Let's treat it as religious text. Then you can't think for yourself anymore.
You're telling me that they don't teach you about the origins of this, or about the great universal story.
Yes.
Until much later on.
Much, much later.
And there are different grades.
That's a hard story to start with.
Okay, but there are different grades. What you're getting at here is that you have to advance up the ladder
Well, it's ontology. It was called The Bridge. So you have this idea of you're on one side of life and you want to get to a higher level of life, and there's a, and Scientology is the bridge from one to the other, and there are stages of that bridge. So you're only coming across that story sort of once you're over halfway, once it's too late to turn around, I guess, then that's when you're getting that story.
And someone like Tom Cruise is at he's virtually at the end of the bridge.
Correct.
He's about to transition.
He's so close from the end.
And according to Scientologists, this guy is like he's almost superhuman now.
You know,
he's learned skills.
He's
learned how to manage himself. He's learned how to be responsible for himself in ways none of us normal mortals will ever learn. I'm just fascinated.
Yes.
I mean, to me, this is amazing stuff.
And it is, and it's complex.
It's a growing
and
religion.
And it's hard. I don't believe it is growing.
I think
that's
certainly
PR. Not anymore. The PR is certainly far greater than the story. And if you look at the reality, and that was part of where I started to question the whole thing, is there was always this idea about how we were growing and it was getting bigger and we were booming and we were taking over the world. Yet, when you go into the world and ask about it, people either go, oh, Scientology, or they don't know about it. We're actually having zero impact on the world.
But there are a lot of it's a very high profile religion.
And that's because of its celebrity following, absolutely. But there have been high profile celebrity defections in recent years. I mean, Tom Cruise is hanging in there, but
they don't like it, huh?
Yeah.
Did they give you shit when you left?
Yes, because I was ultimately excommunicated. While my wife and I, we didn't go. If we had gone quietly, it would have been okay. You know, everyone would have gotten on with their lives. But we had become seriously disillusioned and were concerned, and we had made attempts to try and change things from within, I think, and that wasn't working. So we started to speak to other Scientologists and say, listen, all's not well in the fold, and this is a problem. And then eventually you speak to the wrong guy and you get reported in, and they said, okay, Ryan, well, thanks very much for being around, but you can go now, you and your wife and your kid. Cheers. You're out of here. And
it's a cold cut. You don't get to have conversations afterwards.
I had one last conversation with my brother and with my mom. I didn't speak to my sister or my father, but I had one sort of goodbye conversation with my brother and my mom.
But when you say goodbye, you don't talk anymore?
No, not at all. Not for 3 years.
You're
kidding
me.
Oh, no, it's done. You're not allowed to talk to people.
They won't talk to you?
Not at all. Not at all. It's one of those kind of weird, bizarre things.
Ryan, that has to hurt a little bit. This is your mom.
No. Interestingly enough, I knew it was coming. I mean, my wife and my son, what we were doing, we knew it would eventually get us excommunicated. Yeah. So we were kind of mentally preparing for it. But still, when it happens and it's cut and your mom says, you know, sayonara, I love you, I used to love you, thank you very much, and we're done now. Of course, it's huge, but it's now been 3 years, and eventually you kind of almost have to treat it like a death and sort of go through that grief process and whatever, and you come out there and you go, okay, good.
Well, they've
made their choices, and I've made mine.
Do you ever wonder about what you would do if you bumped into her at the shops?
I still think about it often, and I
suppose you'd be fine. She would probably be very
She would have the issue because she's now more under threat. If she has a conversation with me, then she's going to be in trouble, and so it would be an interesting awkward moment.
That does not in any way sound healthy to me.
It is the single biggest destructive part of Scientology. As you were saying, believe what you want, do what you want. You know, we're all free to do our thing. And, you know, far be it from me to say you're a crazy nut because you believe stuff. We all have our choices. But when you are telling people who and how they communicate to others and that, okay, now families may not talk to each other and demanding that husbands divorce their wives or vice versa, it is destructive, it is unhealthy, and it is the single biggest issue with that subject.
Is there any way to identify Scientologists without knowing them? I mean, if I didn't ask you, right? The last thing I would have thought about you was that you might have once been a Scientologist.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this again in any kind of us and them situation.
Yes.
But if you want to know if someone's a Christian, they might be wearing a little cross around their neck. If someone is Jewish, they might be wearing a little Magen David, Star of David, or they might have a yarmulke on.
Yes.
If they're Muslim and they're a woman, they might have a hijab on. If they're a man, they might have you know, some kind of Saudi garb or a turban or whatever.
And the beards and the hair.
Sure,
and that sort
all of that
thing,
stuff. So there are identifiers. There's no identifier for Scientology.
Well, there's symbology in it. I mean, there's a lot of symbols, and there are people who've made jewelry out of those symbols or tattooed them on their bodies or whatever. But no, I don't think it's as obvious as that. You're not sort of made to do anything. Yeah.
And doing all these weddings now, where it's non-denominational, not even religious, do you find that there are more and more people getting married in a non-religious sense?
It is absolutely growing. There are more and more people. And I think, to be fair, it's probably more and more people are becoming aware that there's an option.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years ago, it was like, well, I really don't want the priest marrying me, but what are my options here?
Any way to make it legal, then.
But there is. We live in a world of such diversity and option, and people are realizing, you know, controlling people was easy 500 years ago, and there were 500 people in a village, and you told them this is all there is to life, and you'll follow this way of living. Now we're all looking over the walls, and we see there's other options, and I go, well, oh, my way of life is actually quite crap. There's options there, and all the traditional barriers to relationships, you know, you weren't allowed to marry someone who wasn't the same religion as you, and then you weren't allowed to marry someone who was the same race as you, and now gender's not even an issue.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I mean, I only started doing gay weddings about 2 years ago, and that was and you have to register separately for it. Gay weddings, yeah. You can't just automatically do them. You have to specifically request, and of course. When I was in Scientology, there was no possibility of me doing it because they would never have sanctioned it.
Yeah. They don't like gays either?
No. Oh. You know what? When you ask them, it's one of those questions you see them, they start to squirm in their seats because they don't want to be, you know, generally, you know, being gay is kind of accepted these days. It's okay.
Religious thing.
Yeah, so they don't want to go against the mainstream because they fear the sort of bad PR more than anything. But philosophically, being gay is not a great thing. So getting my sort of license to do gay weddings, well, I guess it was ultimately, in one sense, I was very happy to do it, but it was also sort of a final fuck you to the whole,
establishment.
Exactly. I'm going to go off and do this.
And you say transgender, gender non-specific.
Yeah.
Have you done one of those?
The closest I got was I married lesbians, and one of the couple has since transitioned. Is in the process of transitioning. So.
Okay, but you didn't have to say, I hereby make, you know, declare you, and then you get stuck because you're like, oh, Jesus, what do I call
it? I have made that mistake, though.
What happened?
No, just with, it was two guys, and then I sort of, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. and Mrs. Damn it. Yeah, I know, but anyway.
What do you think of Trump and the digital stuff that you talk about in your podcast, the fact that there's this guy who in so many ways is so old school and he's such a throwback to like the 1950s male, aggressive, domineering, egotistical, all of that shit. But then at the same time, he is a president who's going to rule through his tweets.
I mean, in some ways he's like,
he's embraced the modern age, but in other ways he's a total throwback.
Yeah. He was a bit of an anathema to me because the fact that he got elected was sort of went against where I thought the world was going, and that, you know, the influence of technology and social media had made this world a lot more transparent and a lot more driven by sort of tolerance, and we're going to go forward. And so now it sort of left me questioning, okay, well, perhaps there's a bit of naivete involved in my thoughts on the world. But I think similar to Brexit, I think there was there's large swaths of population who want to hang on to something that was before or are terrified of the new world, and I think they have a large influence in the vote still because they're not old enough to be dead. So and I think that played a large part of it in the US and with Brexit is older people who are concerned about this world and where it's going and said, no, we want to kind of pull it back a little. That's how I generally view it. And but as you say, now he's, I mean, he's, I think he was on record last week saying he doesn't really like tweeting, but, you know, it's because of the dishonest media that he has to tweet so because he can get his own side of the story out. And it'll be amazing to see what he does with the POTUS Twitter handle
sure.
And how he uses it.
I was just looking through some messages now. Avi, who's in New York, says, banning CNN doesn't mean that Trump is banning all media. CNN is a joke. Chris Cuomo had viewers, told viewers that reading emails, Hillary's emails, was illegal. That's just a point on what we were talking about with Debbie Droke earlier. Mm. So if you were looking into that, what do you think the next big thing is going to be in this digital world?
Well, there's much talk about the singularity. Well, immediately it's going to be artificial intelligence. That's over the next 5 years.
Now we're talking
about
something.
And how that's going to impact our lives. And we see it in small ways with the sort of OK Google and the Siri stuff. And I think that shit's going to become a lot smarter and have greater impact.
Did you hear the other day a child was sitting with Amazon Echo, which is in the room.
Yeah.
Mubs, remember, I've told you about this. Amazon Echo is this machine. It sits there, and it waits for a keyword or whatever you say, Alexa, and then it wakes up. And you give it a command. Like you say, Alexa, I need to order 3 bottles of water. And Alexa orders 3 bottles of water, and they get delivered to your door. So this kid, who's just learned to talk, was ordering, I want a dollhouse.
No.
And like $1,000 worth of stuff delivered to these people's houses.
That's awesome.
So when you talk about this voice activated shit, it's incredible.
Yeah. Right? And it's amazing how it becomes part of what we do, and so artificial intelligence is the one thing, and then there's ultimately people like Ray Kurzweil, who says, okay, at some point in machine intelligence is going to surpass human intelligence.
That's what we call the singularity,
and we can't know what's going to happen after that, because our puny intelligence can't imagine what a greater intelligence would do,
because that greater intelligence will only be 1 degree greater than us at the moment it's realized.
Yes.
But within a space of 10 minutes, it will have learnt things about learning about things that we won't know.
And that's why we're terrified, and that's why every movie we make about it is Terminator. And that's where it's going to end, because we are terrified. It's shit we don't know about. But Ray Kurzweil says, okay, at that point, it's now going to be possible. We will merge with machines. And so we'll be sort of part machine, part not, and we'll upload our consciousness to the cloud. And then we can live forever, because, you know, we won't need our body. So that's what...
How do you like that, Mubs? You like that idea? Uploading your consciousness to the cloud?
Sure.
And you're only available if there's Wi-Fi?
I mean, what about people hacking into my consciousness? That's my only issue.
That's a great point.
Like the Scientologist.
Not like anybody, really. Anyone. Yeah.
But it makes people very uncomfortable when you talk about this.
No, it's incredibly uncomfortable. And Elon Musk has said we're going down a road which can't end well, yet we're all going.
Yeah.
And despite all the fears of it, there's no stopping it. We're racing headlong toward it. So we may as well try and benefit from it as much as we can and hopefully build a better world. I mean, in theory, the potential to do great things in the world and finally deal with issues like, you know, poverty and food scarcity and all these great social problems can be solved. We can start to realize solutions to those through the technology we're developing. And that's kind of where I thought we were all going. And then Trump gets elected. You go, okay, well, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we will ultimately all just kill each other or let the AIs do it because they realize we're the problem.
Are you sort of guy who jumps on every trend?
No, I don't. I like to explore the trends and see where they go. But I think now, having been doing this for the last 5 or 6 years, I think you've come to realize that there is in fact a hype cycle with things, and you know it's all amazing and it's all great, and the revolution of technology happens slowly. Everything in this world happens gradually, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's happening very quickly, but it's happening in stages. You know, that tweet you mentioned just a moment ago about banning CNN. If we talk about dictatorial dictatorships, you know, they don't start like, okay, you know, the first day, all the Jews are bad. We're closing all the shops. They're not allowed to be in business. These are the new rules. It happens kind of slowly. And it's like, okay, well, CNN.
The frog in the warming pan.
Yeah. So all these great revolutions happen in stages. Once we're used to the one, now we're ready to talk about the next stage.
Okay, but you don't, for example, you don't have a house full of gadgets, do you?
No, listen, I wear, you know, a smart watch. I've got the phones. I've got, as soon as the Google Home is available, I'll get
You'll
that
be
thing.
On that.
Absolutely, I'll get that. So from that point of view, no, I love technology and I love using it as much.
Drone?
No, I don't have. Don't own a drone. Although if my wife had anything to do with it, we would have a drone. From a photography point of view.
Okay, but that's something. Mm. I mean, have you seen those pictures?
Oh, it is. It is.
Have you guys seen those videos that they make with those new Mavic drones, which are they can sense when, you know, there's an obstacle in their way or whatever, so they avoid tree branches and that kind of thing, and you can fly them right up high. I watched the most amazing video the other day of the dumbest thing. It's like they opened the sluice gates on the Hartebeespoort Dam.
Yes.
But they flew a drone
over it,
under a bridge and into it to show up close how this water is flowing over these sluice gates.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Photography that was not possible before, because you couldn't fly a helicopter under there before, and that was the only way to get up there. And it cost tens of thousands of rands to spend 5 seconds in the air.
And then, in another year or two, drone footage will be so common, it'll be expected. And it will be...
Yeah.
We won't be awed by it anymore. So, and that's the nature of human evolution, isn't it? We're challenged by new things, or we want to do new things, and it's all great and amazing. Then it's routine, ho-hum, what's the next thing? Or we kind of become lulled into what we are. And then we get older, and then when the new things come, we resist that. And that's how we've been since the beginning. You know, old people are not great with change, so we fight it.
We've got a call on the line from your mom. She just wants to talk to you. Yes, go ahead. Mrs. Hogarth, yes.
Hello, I just want to say that this man is a complete imposter. You should chase him out of your studio immediately. He's a liar and he said some terrible things about Scientology that just aren't true. Thank you, bye-bye.
Mom.
She's gone. Oh, I don't want to talk to you. She called you that man.
We were so close. Our first conversation in 3 years.
All right, so you got a son.
Yes.
What kinds of things do you want him to do? I mean, you know, when you're a parent, this is something I spoke to my brother about the other day. Because you've got two kids. When you're a parent, you have hopes and dreams and aspirations for your kid.
Mm.
But you've got to be really careful not to project them onto the kid so that he or she ends up being your project rather than your child.
Well, it's part of – isn't it the parent's job to mess up their children? I mean, that's kind of what – that's the deal. I mean, if you've raised a child and they don't say, oh, you know, my mom or my dad or whatever, that's part of the deal. But my son is 25 years old. He's married. He's out of the house. So so anything I'd hope for him, he's either done it or he hasn't.
But you must have – aspirations and dreams for him that you will try to guide him. Like if he comes home to you and he says, Dad, I would really like to be a circus clown.
Mm.
You're going to go, first you're going to throw up.
Let's look at the options, son.
Listen, there are so many interesting things in the world. Circus clown, it's very dangerous.
Mm. I want him to be successful at what he does.
But what if you're so, I need to know this because I'm not a parent.
Yes.
But I would struggle with this problem. So what if he comes home and he says he wants to be a circus clown? What are you going to say to him?
I'd probably have a long conversation with him about it. Like, why? Well, what do you hope to get out of it? And we do have these conversations.
What would your dad would have hit you.
No.
My dad would have hit me.
No, my dad has never been physical with any of us.
Oh, really?
No.
Would he have shouted?
But is he good at the
guilt
trip?
No, he doesn't even shout, but he just, you know, he just breaks you psychologically.
Like, I'm not even, very, very, I'm not mad.
Very
I'm just
calmly.
Disappointed.
You know, he's always in control. But no, he's never been physical with us.
Ben, if you told your father that you wanted to be a circus clown, he would have said, who are you? What are you doing in my house?
No, he probably would have just gone, okay.
Really?
Yeah. He probably wouldn't have been thrilled, but he wouldn't stop me.
I thought about this the other day, and it bothered me. I didn't know what I would say.
No, listen, I guess from my, you know, considering where we came from, it's, you know, it's been 25 years sort of being in a circus in a way. So maybe that was still a better option if he said, okay, I want to be a circus clown. Okay, better than where we were.
Is there a lot of money in Scientology? Just to go back to that for a second, because you mentioned it now, and I suddenly
thought. Not if you work there. I mean, you make no money if you work there, but. But and that was.
Do you pay to be a member?
No. Oh gosh, I said that sort of so instantly, like it was. There isn't a membership fee, but you pay for the study you do, you pay for the counseling you do, and in the later years, which was the start of why I started to question what was going on, yeah. Is we pressed people for donations, for buildings, for projects, for give us money for this, give us money for that. So there's no. It doesn't say, okay, to be a member, this is how much you have to pay, but there is an inordinate amount of pressure to keep paying money for a wide variety of things.
Have you heard about this guy who's in charge of it?
David Miscavige.
That's right.
Yes.
But he doesn't call they don't pronounce it Miscavige. They say Muscovy or something.
Okay.
I can't remember how you pronounce it. But it's pronounced strangely, right? Have you heard about this guy? He sounds like total nutcase.
No, he's been in charge ever since I was involved.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was 14 years old.
He's like the head honcho of Scientology.
And he took over. Absolutely. Yeah. He's the Pope. He's the dictator. And, what he says goes.
And his wife apparently has just been missing. We don't know where she is. Yeah. We don't know if she's alive.
No, well, we kind of know. We suspect where she is. But she hasn't been seen in public for a long time.
I'm pleased to say that your wife is here and she is, she's alive and she's
fully present.
She's breathing the air and she, Have you had something to drink? Everything's cool. You're alive and well. We just need to check because, sometimes when you try and leave Scientology, someone disappears. But she's apparently not been seen.
Correct. I think it's now for about 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I have no doubt she's alive and she's okay, but she's been tucked away and she's doing a job and she thinks she's saving the world like they all do. But she hasn't been... And hasn't been with her husband for that long.
Yeah, it's mad.
Yeah.
Absolute madness. Listen, I could talk to you all morning about this stuff. I'm fascinated by it. We are, though, meant to be talking about digital transformation and digital influence. And if people want to know what you're up to on the show, give us a sexy little reason to come and listen to your podcast.
That podcast, well, firstly, I had this idea that it should be 15 minutes long. So it is really short. And my idea with that is that the average drive wherever you're going, if you're going to work or to a meeting, is around 20 minutes. So in 15 minutes, you can listen to an entire podcast.
Joburg, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Who's counting?
No, hold on. Now you're going to blow my theory now. So it's a 15-minute thing, and it's stories of digital transformation in relationships, in business, in life, how digital is changing the way we behave, the way we do things. So I like to grab stories that show that or reflect that, whether it's new ways to shop or think about shopping or dating or anything about how life is evolving because of digital.
I think a lot of people want to be interested in that and will want to listen. So if you do, then you can go and find it on cliffcentral.com. It's called Digital Influence. Ryan Hogarth, pleasure to see you.
Thank you very much for having
me. Great to have you here.
This was interesting.
Yeah, it always is. Always good to see you.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing a whole bunch of stuff with us
about
your life and all the things that you've been up to. And if you have a very bizarre wedding in the future, you'll tell us about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But only the bizarre ones. We're not interested in the regulars.
They were in love. They got married. Ah, it was beautiful.
We want to know about a midget lesbian quadriplegic who gets married to a
tree.
A tree. What a story. Right?
Absolutely.
Beautiful. That would be phenomenal. If you perform that wedding, you will be phenomenal.
Okay, good.
You don't mind. You would.
You don't judge. I don't judge. As long as it's legal, I'm there. I will happily marry anybody. Yeah.
Very good. And can people engage your services if they need to?
If they can. I do a lot, far fewer than I used to. So just because...
What's the best way to get hold of you?
Find me Facebook, Twitter, Ryan Hogarth. Cliff Central, Instagram, whatever.
Right.
Easy to find.
All over the place.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up with some news. Thank you very, very much, Ryan. CliffCentral.com.